You're listening to Food Integrity Now with Carol Grabe, Matt Spaeth, and Jeannie Smith, revealing the truth about the food we eat. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now, the show for people who care about the food they eat. This is Carol Grabe, and this show's topic is neonicotinoids. Our guest today is June Stoyer. June Stoyer is the executive producer and host of the Organic View radio show, which has recently been named by New Hope 360 as one of the top 10 most influential shows to follow. She is an environmentalist, an educator, and an activist in the organic movement. She's also a master gardener and master composter. June is working towards educating the public about colony collapse disorder and is a hobbyist beekeeper. Today, we're going to discuss colony collapse disorder and neonicotinoids. June, welcome to the show.
Carol, thank you so much for having me on your show. This is a wonderful opportunity to share some of the information that I've learned with from some of the people that are really doing all that they can to not only help educate the public, but also make the necessary changes so that we can actually do something to help our honeybees and our other pollinators.
Well, before we get started, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and why you started the Organic View?
Sure. The Organic View began basically out of my own personal interest to communicate with other people that had just had similar questions about some of the things that were going on with the environment, but also people that love to talk about horticulture, that love to talk about good organic foods, and also different environmental issues that mainstream media just was not covering. It was quite bizarre to me that in mainstream media, whether it be periodicals or television or even radio, the subjects that I really wanted to find information about, the information just was not there. So when I launched the Organic View, I had no idea that the show was going to be the success that it is, and it just kind of evolved, just based upon my own curiosity and interest in finding out the reason why certain things were happening, and also to continue the discussion about horticulture and about nature, and just to keep it educational and something that people of all ages can learn from. The show itself is family-oriented. We have a global audience of over 1 million listeners, and it's just been a tremendous experience being able to connect with so many people around the globe about so many different subjects. So that's basically why I started the show.
Well, that's exciting. And can you give our listeners your website and how they can listen to your show while we're talking about it?
Oh, sure. Thank you, Carol. The website is www.theorganicview.com, and the show is broadcast Monday to Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern. And to date, I've done, over 300 interviews, I think. It's been, I think I'm over 500 interviews at this point. And I've interviewed everyone from Michael Potter, the CEO of Eden Foods, to John Robbins, Joel Saladin, who is one of my favorite people in the world. He's just a tremendous leader, and he really is getting people to take responsibility for how their food is grown. And I think the work that he's doing is very, very important, especially with the whole organic movement. I've also had the pleasure of working with some of my favorite beekeepers, such as Walter Hofiger, who's the president of the European Beekeeping Association, as well as Phil Chandler, who is the host of the Barefoot Beekeeper in the UK. He's also an activist, and he's an expert on top bar hive beekeeping, and he has been on my show a number of times. We have a lot of mutual respect and support for one another, and another friend of mine Mr. Tom Theobald, who is very, very outspoken when it comes to many of the issues that are affecting our honeybees. And he's also just a wonderful person to know and to learn from. So I've been very blessed to have the opportunity to work with some of the brightest minds and some of the best people that really are not only passionate about what they do, but they really are looking to make a change in the way that things are transpiring in our environment.
Isn't that what it's all about? It's not just talking about what's going on, but, you know, how do we change what's going on? So on that note, what are neonicotinoids?
Basically, neonicotinoids are a group of systemic pesticides. Now, what they primarily do is they are absorbed by the plant's vascular system. The reason that they are such a problem is that it used to be that when it came to your food, when they would spray the crops, people would think that you could wash off the fruit or you could cut off the skin. With this new breed of pesticides, you can't wash it off, you can't cut it off. It's actually in the fruit. So that's a huge problem. And the reason that it's such a problem for our honeybees is because of the fact that the honeybee is not there to eat the actual plant. It's there to basically collect the pollen or perhaps take advantage of any water that may be on the plant, and they are absorbing these chemicals. And they're is a Dutch toxicologist named Dr. Henk Tennekes, who has been, he's done some amazing research on the neonicotinoids, specifically with imidacloprid and clothianidin, and he wrote a book called A Disaster in the Making, which is very, very powerful. If you go to either, if you Google Dr. Henk Tennekes, and his last name is spelled T-E-N-N-E-K-E-S, and or you go on to Amazon.com and you buy an e-copy of A Disaster in the Making, it's really eye-opening. This man did the research initially. He was studying cancer. And what had happened was he started paying attention to the diet of birds. Somehow he started just noticing that the food chain, when it came to what birds were eating, one thing kind of led to the other. And lo and behold, he started studying what was happening to pollinators, especially with the honeybees. And he came out with the research. And unfortunately, it, for the most part, was ignored. And since Dr. Tennekes published his information, his research, there have been a number of other researchers that have published information, especially the Purdue Institute. Dr. Christian Krupke has been very outspoken about the research that they've done, and he's also been featured on some, actually mainstream media is starting to pick it up. So he was on a recent segment with NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, I do believe. And it's nice to see that finally all of this information is starting to get out there.
Well, it needs to get out there. I'm sure you've seen the Vanishing of the Bees movie. And I think
yes,
that's doing quite a bit to get the word out there. But more needs to be done. I think there needs to be more lobbying and people need to be more outraged by this. So why or how do we get people really, really involved in this?
That's a really interesting question, because the thing is that for the most part, people don't understand that the honeybee is not indigenous to America. It was something that was brought over with the Mayflower. And the thing is that we've gotten so comfortable with agriculture, the way our food is produced here, that we really do depend upon the honeybee to pollinate many of the crops that we enjoy. And the fact of the matter is that last year we lost one-third of our honeybees. And I don't know what those figures are going to look like this year, but I do know that many of the commercial beekeepers are really going through very difficult times, because the thing is that they don't have any control over this. One of the bigger issues that is not really talked about has to do with the fact that with neonicotinoids, they are basically the companion technology to GMOs. And, you know, that's basically one dynamic duo that basically makes it impossible for the honeybees to really stand a chance. And these commercial beekeepers, people don't seem to understand what they go through. These folks leave their home for several months at a time in order to help pollinate these commercial crops. And it's something that you really have to love. You have to love the work in order to do it. And it's not like they're making millions of dollars doing this. I've interviewed Jeff Anderson and Dave Hackenberg. Tom Theobald's has been on many times. And for your listeners that are not familiar with Tom, they can find Tom at the Boulder County Beekeeping Association. He was the president for many years, and he's very active as a columnist, as well as just doing public outreach so that more people can understand what's going on. And he's a smaller commercial beekeeper, but the thing is that he's at a point where his business has been destroyed because of these chemicals. And the bottom line is that we need to do something, because the neonicotinoids, this is another part that is really disturbing. They have a half-life of 19 years, and the thing is that they're mobile in water. So, you know, it could be rain, it could be groundwater, it doesn't matter, but it's because it's mobile, it can spread. And on top of that, the research that Dr. Tanakis has conducted shows that it's cumulative in the nervous system. So, in other words, the more that is consumed, the more that it builds up, and the damage is irreparable. And that is in his research. So if your listeners would like to find out more information, connect with Dr. Hank Tanakis. And in his book, A Disaster in the Making, it's a very powerful description of exactly what's going on and why we need to really do something now. We're out of time. So the public really needs to understand what this will mean for them. And once we eliminate our most precious pollinators, our food is basically going to amount to something that of gruel for the most part. I mean, it's pretty devastating.
Right. And so in your opinion, why do you think the EPA would approve the use of a known toxin like a neonicotinoid, which is definitely, you know, proven to, you know, be one of the major causes of the colony collapse disorder? What's your take on that?
Well, Tom Theobald has been credited with leaking the document about clothianidin, which is one of the primary neonicotinoids. The EPA granted registration without fully allowing the corporation that produces this particular chemical to go through the full process, and they've been revisiting that, and I don't know what changes that they're going to make, but we're hoping that with everything that's been going on, with the demonstrations that have taken place, for example, in Cologne, Germany, just recently, Walter Hofacker, who, as I mentioned before, is the president of the European Beekeepers Association, he gave a very powerful testimony, and even the first interview that I did with Walter was very, very powerful. He gives a very detailed description of exactly what happens to the honeybee and why. I mean, step by step, he explains everything. So I would for folks that are interested in learning about the actual process, there is a podcast archive on theorganicview.com, or if you have an iTunes subscription or Zune, you can download the segment. But when you listen to that interview, it's so incredibly powerful because of that description. And when you get that visual in your head, it's something that is so deeply disturbing. It makes you wonder, how is this even possible? I mean, this isn't something that just affects one or two people or even 100 people. This affects everybody. And the fact that these chemicals remain in the ground for such a long time is just very, very disturbing. And as one of the things that Tom Theobald has pointed out is that it just takes a very, very small amount to create a massive amount of devastation. So the fact of the matter is that these systemic pesticides are basically wiping out our honeybee populations. And it's interesting that they have been banned in places like Germany and France and other countries, but here in the United States, I just hope that they take action very soon, because I really don't know what they're going to do once everything is gone.
Right. And how do you see it moving in that direction?
From what I understand from the scientists that I communicate with, as well as other activists that are more involved with the commercial beekeeping end of things, as well as, you know, some other folks that have been very outspoken, they have said that the news is getting around, but we're just at a point where we need to see results. We need to see people, we need to see that the people that are in power, rather, are actually taking the right steps to rectify something that should have never happened in the first place.
Right. And
so time will kind of
tell.
Yeah,
and then, you know, it's my understanding, what was that, stink bug? Brown marmorated stink bug. Did you know about that? That they were going to reintroduce a new neonicotinoid to get rid of this bug. So to me, and this was on, this was in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And it's really interesting that they would introduce a new neonicotinoid to get rid of a stink bug that's, you know, not a huge problem that's going to kill more bees. I mean, it just does not make sense.
Well, it's just interesting that they keep doing kind of the same things over and over. I mean, in upstate New York with the tent caterpillars, I mean, they saw what a disaster that was. Every time you upset the ecosystem and you upset that food chain by introducing something that doesn't belong, there's an imbalance that is not natural. So, of course, there is going to be some price that's going to have that must be paid as a result. And unfortunately, human beings just don't seem to understand that history just continues to repeat itself as these so-called experts keep making the same poor choices.
Right.
And then once they open up Pandora's box, you can't necessarily close it. So it just makes you wonder, at what point is enough going to be enough?
Also, I think the public may not be aware of just what the honeybee does. I mean, a lot of people don't even understand that it's not just that they make honey. They pollinate more than 90 of our tastiest flowering crops. And the honeybee is responsible for 80% of that pollination, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So, you know, that's a lot. And the impact of the disappearing honeybees, I mean, this should be like number one priority.
You would think
yeah.
It would be, but unfortunately, we're just at a point where we're dumping so many chemicals into the land, and you have that, you have issues with water quality, you have issues with air quality. It makes you wonder how the bees stand a chance to begin
right.
with.
Yeah, I agree. And could you say a little bit more about neonicotinoids being a companion to GMOs? What can you speak a little bit more about that, what you meant?
Sure. Well, basically, when they plant the seeds, the seeds are coated with the neonicotinoids, and it's absorbed into the plant's vascular system, and that's something that they don't really talk about, but that is basically one of the biggest problems. So, when the GM crops are planted, they're also using this technology in conjunction with the genetically modified technology, the genetically modified seeds rather, and it, as I said earlier, it creates this dynamic duo that is very problematic. And bottom line is that it's not working. It's creating all sorts of problems, and more people need to understand that the more we allow this to continue, the harder it is going to be in order to do anything about it. I mean, it would be really shameful if we would have to import high quality, healthy food that's clean. And all the more reason why people really need to reconnect with who their farmer is, who their local producers are, or as I try to communicate to my audience, as well as students and other people that I help to educate, take responsibility for your own food and start growing your own food. It doesn't matter if you have a big garden or a small garden, but even if you have a small container garden in your kitchen where you grow your own herbs, it's a start. And it's a step in the right direction because you're reconnecting with nature, you're reconnecting with how your food is produced. And not to mention the fact that it's also helping you to save money and you're eating much healthier because you understand what is going in your food. And especially with the economy being what it is, this has been one of the blessings of the downturn of the economy that people have been opting to grow their own food because they can't afford to eat out. And it's actually a good thing because you have more control over what you're putting in your body. And especially in the Northeast, where summer is just about to begin, it's garden season. And it's a whole new growing season. There's so many different opportunities to grow different things. And when you connect with other gardeners, whether they're master gardeners or just neighbors, friends, what have you, you can swap vegetables, you can swap seeds, you can save seeds for next year, you can do all sorts of things. And the thing is that it's something that brings people together. So the more the people are connected with how their food is produced, as opposed to just going to a store where everything is ready, or even worse, processed and ready to eat, that's when people really don't understand how important these issues are.
Exactly. And we're real big proponents of know your food source, buy local, teach your kids about food because, it's people, a lot of people are just on autopilot and they go to the grocery store and they just, we're a society of people right now that want convenience. And that's really a problem, with food.
Well, we're like that because it didn't happen
Right.
overnight. This has been the course of several decades. It basically started post World War II. You had the basically the women who were the caregivers in the household. They were the ones responsible for getting dinner on the table, and that's not a sexist comment. That's how it was. And a woman who had a family would never buy something from the store. It would be considered just wrong for you to buy something and bring it into your household. If you made a sauce, it didn't matter what it was. It was something that you made because that showed the type of mother that you were or wife. And that was a re true reflection on yourself. And basically, what had happened was the manufacturers started pushing because they were trying to get their product out on the market, and one of the biggest culprits was Chef Boyardee. And Chef Boyardee had a great product at the time that they were trying to sell. Chef Boyardee came to America. He was a very seasoned chef, had wonderful experience, came here, and they tried to sell product to the market, and the wives were just not buying it. And then, lo and behold, the war broke out, and women were working jobs that the men could not work because they were serving the country. And they had this issue where they had to get food on the table to feed their families. So it was a prime opportunity to introduce products that had been enjoyed in the restaurants that were basically heat and serve. So that's kind of how it evolved. And things just kind of took a whole different turn. And now foods are heavily processed. There's so many different ingredients that most people can't even pronounce. There's some ingredients that I can't even pronounce. But these are the types of foods that people should not eat.
Correct.
And something that started off on a good note, where it was just trying to provide a high quality food that was made from good ingredients, to what we have today, where there's so many different additives and artificial ingredients. I think it's ironic that there are so many foods on the market that actually say contains real whatever the ingredient is. I think it's also ironic that lemonade, hardly the processed lemonade that's on the market, doesn't matter what the brand is, hardly any of these products contain real lemon. But then you look at furniture polish and it contains real lemon. I think that's completely
Yeah,
ironic,
good point.
but
Good
that's
point on that.
that's exactly how things are in our culture, and it's because we've allowed this to happen. We've allowed the marketers to tell us that this is what's in style, this is what is supposed to be trendy, and the fact of the matter with the whole nuclear family, where people need to have more leisure time and you need to save your time for other things, for enjoying life. Well, that never really
Right.
happened. Basically, people sacrificed all sorts of things that really attributed to maintaining good health. And by cutting corners with their food, by cutting corners with exercise, and by disconnecting with nature, by disconnecting with their local farmers or with their local food producers, they wound up with something other than leisure time. They wound up spending time at the doctor's offices, at the hospitals, at different facilities for different treatments for different illnesses. So that was the trade-off that we made, unfortunately. So now things are coming full circle, and there's a big movement to get people to go back to where the things
Right.
were way back when. And as a society, it took us a long time to get here. It didn't happen overnight, but the bottom line is that we're changing, and there are many people who are starting to recognize that, hey, you know something, we need to make these changes, and we need to do it
Right.
today.
June, I'd like to get back to talking about bees, but before we do that, I'd like to acknowledge our sponsor. Our show is brought to you today by Willard Water. Willard Water is made with fossilized organics and contains nearly two dozen trace minerals, which are essential for maintaining strong bones, heart health, and good energy. Dr. Willard's patented formula helps the body absorb the minerals and nutrients our body needs to maintain this optimal health. To find out more about Willard's water, go to drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. Or call them at 888 379 4552. June, I noticed from your bio that you are a hobbyist beekeeper. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got involved in that?
Well, it's kind of interesting. When you're out in the garden, you see the bees and you think to yourself, hey, you know something? I have a really great garden. What can I do to really enhance what I have? And I grew up with bees. I was not allowed to care for them, but it was something that I always wanted to do as an adult. But unfortunately, the options for learning about beekeeping were not abundant in the area that I lived in. So I said, okay, I'm going to connect with people that are teachers and whatnot. And I had a little bit of a hard time just finding a teacher and just learning. So I decided, well, you know what? Let me start off by learning on my own. So I bought a couple books,
to understand bee biology and how bees function and so on and so forth. And once I was ready to take the plunge, then I found a local bee club in which there was a gentleman who was giving classes at one of the libraries, and it was tremendous. I mean, you learn so many different things. You learn about the equipment, you learn about just everything that there is to know about beekeeping. And I highly recommend to anybody that's listening that if you want to learn about beekeeping, do the same thing. Take out a book in the library or go to Amazon.com. There are a number of wonderful books out there. And the bottom line is that if you can handle dogs, you can handle bees. Bees are tremendous beings. They can sense fear, but they can also sense love. And many years ago, people would use bees to determine weather patterns. And it's just amazing what we can learn from them. And so as a hobbyist beekeeper, I started learning about the importance of not only honeybees as far as excuse me, their impact in agriculture, but I had also done some work tagging monarch butterflies. So, now I was familiar with working with the monarchs and just studying different butterflies, and it just kind of grew from there. And then after I got my first hive, I just became so interested in just learning from what other beekeepers were doing and just trying to learn as much as I can, or I could rather, so that I could just take better care of my bees. And that's basically where it started. And then once I got more involved with the show, with just different issues going on with the environment, I started connecting with other people, and it just kind of took off from there. But there are so many wonderful people that give classes all over the country. A very good friend of mine, Marina Marchese, who is the president of, I think it's Red Bee Apiary up in Connecticut. She is just a wonderful person to learn from. And they have speakers from all over that come to their meetings. And there's also Bee Culture magazine, and Kim Flodum, he's the editor. He's been on the show, on the Organic Bee Radio show, many times. Really wonderful magazine, and they also have a candle making business as well. And it's kind of interesting the difference between authentic candles that come from beeswax as opposed to the paraffin. I mean, the paraffin, it's all synthetic, and just the fumes itself is just, you know, not something that you want to breathe in. But there's a different quality of light that emanates from a beeswax candle. And they also burn, I think they burn a lot longer. And just the light itself, it's just more soothing to the eyes. But it's just kind of interesting when you learn about all the different benefits that the honeybee has to offer. And even if you look at ancient Egypt, the ancient Egyptians used the different bee products for medicinal purposes. And you know, there's just so much history, and there's so much to learn from, or to learn about, rather. And if anybody really wants to really connect with nature, I highly recommend that you join a local bee club, or just even take out a book and just start learning about it, because they're just fascinating beings to learn from.
Right. One of my co-hosts, Matt Spaeth, he just recently took some classes, and he now has some bees. So I think he's going to be talking about that more on future shows. So we'll look forward to that. Well, June, thank you for being a guest on our show today. And if you'd like to give your website again for our listeners, that would be great.
Sure. It's theorganicview.com, and you can follow me on Twitter under my name, under the show's name, which is The Organic View, or at Organic Guru. That's not a name that I gave to myself. That's actually a name that my friends used to tease me about, because I was always so particular about That's got to be organic. And well, when you have certain sensitivities to the different chemicals that are used to produce our foods, some people don't have choices. And that's why it's very important for people to really reconnect with how their food is produced. But thank you so much, Carol, for the opportunity to talk about something that more people really need to know about and understand why it's such an important subject.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing it to the show today, and we're going to continue to follow this important topic. And thank you all for listening to us today. If you like what you hear on the show, please remember to head on over to iTunes and leave us a comment or rating. That's really a good way to spread the show around and help us along. And if you have any show ideas or comments or just want to say hi, email us at info@foodintegritynow.org. We'd love to hear from you. This is Carol Gravet wishing you a happy and healthy week. And until next time, stay educated and stay active.